The music seems to dip, as outside the window you see a passing billboard. Parallel Lives, it says. Turn left for adventures in analog role-playing. Distance, about an hour and a half. As the tape whirs, and there is a moment of dead space between tracks, you shrug and adjust your seatbelt. Once again, this is Bram, and today we are talking about Avery McDonald's Ribbon Drive. You may remember that name because previously we looked at The Quiet Year, another game by this person. Today I am joined by Charles, Olivia S., Raven, and in the background you may hear Olivia D., but she didn't actually play with us, so she probably won't be talking very much.
Sup?
She'll be the silent partner in this endeavor.
Ribbon Drive is a...
freeform role-playing game?
A musical adventure.
Road trip role-playing game, right?
Ad hoc road movie.
Yeah. In the PDF for Ribbon Drive itself, the creator notes that it is a way to simulate any road trip movie you've ever watched. Is that how they put it?
Yeah, no, an Itu Mama Tam generator.
Right.
Thelma and Louise-like, if you will.
I've never watched very many road trip movies, but...
neither have I.
I recognize those movies and have watched some of them, which put me, I suppose, in the minority for our crowd.
I did as well. Although I will say, not to get too ahead of myself here, our game was not particularly traditional road trippy.
I think it's safe to say that while we had a good time overall, it is the case that we might have played this one at least partially wrong, or maybe not wrong, but... I think probably not the way that they envisioned us playing it.
Well, I have a confession to make, which is that I did actually come in with a genre in mind. I took steps to shunt us down a certain kind of path.
It is the case you came in with a genre in mind, and you tried to shunt us to that genre, and then you shunted us further than that genre into a different one.
I would like to at least hope that my playlist also helped diverting us down the surreal horror path.
That's a good segue, actually. Because the way that you start on Ribbon Drive is... rather than having the preparation be like making your character and rolling up your stats or whatever, instead, each player, on their own time, creates a playlist.
Aims for 30 minutes to an hour is about what the game recommends.
Right.
It was like an hour and 15 minutes. But...
I believe that most of our playlists were around the 40-minute mark.
Yeah, I've shot for 40.
That sounds about right. Mm-hmm. You could probably have all your playlists be exactly a half an hour, the bare minimum. You could probably have all your playlists be the Uber Max. It wouldn't really matter too much because I don't think you're going to get to all your songs, and that's mm-hmm. okay. What it is this is sort of the soundtrack of your road trip movie that we are creating. And the way that it fits together is that each player's mixtape is how they refer to it basically here. And it's probably not going to be a mixtape because we don't live in caves anymore. They have to have a specific theme, and it can be something as basic as, like, my mixtape is all rap song, or it could be something more complicated, like, one of the examples that it gives is, like, this is a mixtape all about weddings. So, in our case, we can go around real quick, and so my mixtape was called The Book Unwritten, because you always give it a name, and it is loosely about spirituality, sometimes just basic things like, this is a song more or less about Christianity, or something much weirder, cult stuff, that's fine too.
Mine was called You Will Be Mine, and it was about romantic obsession and codependence.
Mine was called Creature Feature, and was about, sort of themed around classic movie monsters such as werewolves and zombies.
Was Werewolf Bar Mitzvah lurking anywhere on that?
It was not.
I told her!
No!
She told me I was doing that. It's like, you have Werewolf Bar Mitzvah on there, right?
That is a missed opportunity, but I understand your reasoning.
I will note that part of making your playlist is, since it is creating the setting and characters, is not to include anything too out of the ordinary or wacky. Unless you all come to the table knowing that someone is going to show up with, you know...
my joke playlist that was an hour of songs about butts.
That almost ended up being canon, yes. Anyways, let's go with Charles.
No, I appreciate it. I'm glad. I forgot that was actually in the rules, which was do not just try to fuck with your fellow friends. Do not, you know, construct a soulful mix of weepy love songs and just cap it off with, like, good. I had something, too.
I was thinking about it.
What was my... well, I had a joke song, but I forget what it was that I discarded.
Miss New Booty. Eight times.
Big Booty Bitches.
I will say, I was disappointed...
What's New Pussycat would have been a good one, actually. I do like that song.
I was disappointed that Olivia's mix did not end up I would have forgiven Werewolf Bar Mitzvah because you did have Werewolf in London there, but you didn't have the Monster Mash.
I put it in there and then took it out because I was like, no, too silly.
As we were leaving.
Or Spooky Skeletons.
If I knew the existence of Skeleton Man, which you can see on my Tumblr, dear listener, I would have put Skeleton Man in there. I think there would be, in a completely different game of Ribbon Drive, a time and a place for 4+ full soundtracks of, you know, Move Bitch or Werewolf Bar Mitzvah or Barbie Girl, just like a really humor-heavy, stupid game of Ribbon Drive.
And just like that, listener, we're starting on our making of Ribbon Drive Prime. We will be developing it throughout this episode, and when we come out the other side, we'll have a new genre for you to drive in.
That'll be $50 on drive-thru.
What is my favorite song? I'm completely blanking on the name. The one about butts. I know all the words to it.
I can't help you here.
Sir Mix-a-Lots.
Oh. Yeah. I assumed you wouldn't forget it, and now I'm not going to tell you.
What's the name of the song?
It's way funnier that you don't remember.
Yeah, this is perfect, actually.
It's going to come to you like 3/4 of the way through the podcast, and you're going to interrupt someone
to say...
It's
got the mean white girls in it. You know the one.
I absolutely know what you're talking about. However, I'm not going to tell you.
It's funny, because I'm probably not going to cut that.
I think we should leave that in.
Please cut that.
Oh, we'll see.
Oh, God, no. Actually, on the subject of comedic mixes, my mix was very nearly 80s movie car chase. It was just going to be synths and, like, pounding bass and anything I could cobble together out of, like, Kavinsky and Daft Punk albums. And that was what it was going to be. But at the last moment, I realized I did not want to listen to 40 minutes straight of that. And what I did want to listen to 40 minutes straight of was dreary apocalyptic music with a significant admixture of Southern Gothic and songs about death and dead worlds, which sounded like a lot more fun to me.
It was an upbeat and happy time driving along the countryside.
Charles's mix, actually, to get onto the game mechanics, was the one that we played first, which is where we start building our specific character and setting. The first song in the playlist we use to build the setting, the song was...
Grounds for Divorce by the band Elbow, which you can find strewn all over 8 tracks and nowhere else. Oh, yeah, sorry, the mix that mine was entitled, pretentiously, The Widening Gyre Descending.
One thing, too, that's cool, is that you don't discuss your mixes particularly before you bring them to the table, so that allows there to be a nice mix of mixes, without necessarily knowing what's going to go into it, so you can have maybe 3 mixes that are similar, 1 mix that is a wild card, and that's fine.
So, the game talked about that as a plus thing, but I feel like, especially if it comes up late in the game, if one of the playlists is really different than the other ones, it can be really difficult to transition the tone of the game. I built my mix under the assumption that we were playing kind of a traditional road trip setting, and when we ended up being in a surreal horror setting, I felt that my playlist felt really out of place.
You felt that the romantic obsession was out of place in a surreal horror setting? Because I thought it was perfect.
I feel like, beyond any subjective things, my playlist was the only playlist that had a song on it that we literally had nothing we could do with it and sat and listened to the whole song before moving on to the next scene.
It's worth mentioning at this juncture that sit, listen, and meditate to a song as being part of the gameplay experience is, I think, explicitly mentioned in the rules. You might just sit here and collect your thoughts and meditate on meaning. Also, to touch on what you were saying about the way that the heterogeneity of mixes is supposed to be a plus, theoretically, it's worth mentioning that their gameplay example is like, yeah, Carl brought a mix of indie rock, Stephanie brought a mix of folk indie rock, and John brought a mix of folk rock from the north.
Oh, and Sarah brought in an indie pop mix. Gosh, we're just...
The indie pop mix was so different. I mean...
It just really added a spice to the proceeding. So, which is to say that I think it helps if you and your friends are boring people who all like the exact same things. This game might go even better for you than it went for us. So, first point in favor of Ribbon Drive, if you and your friends are boring, it's good.
Take it you didn't like the game.
No, I actually did. I just think that if you and your friends don't differ from each other notably, this game may even go better for you than it did for us. If you go to the same concerts together, you're probably going to have an okay ribbon driving time until, all 3 of you put the same Skrillex song on and realize that you have to die.
What you do to start Ribbon Drive, once you're all together and you have your mixtapes, and maybe you got them through 8-Track, and maybe you got them through iTunes or whatever, You choose one arbitrarily to go first. In our case, we went first with Charles's mix.
I volunteered.
Charles volunteered. He was excited. And
I had a genre I wanted to do.
You had a genre. Mm-hmm. And you then play the first song. You play the first song entirely in silence. Everyone listens to it. You put up the lyrics to it, or you've already had the lyrics printed out, depending on how good you are at preparing things ahead of time.
How many of you own printers?
What a joke. So after you listen to the first song, you pause that mixtape, you have some silence, and then together you discuss exactly what this world is, how you are going to eventually go on a road trip, and why and where you're going. In our case, we decided that we were starting in a small town that was literally, like, collapsing. And that was taken from one line from the song about a hole in the neighborhood.
There is a hole in my neighborhood down which of late I cannot help but fall. Which does, in fact, scan better in the song than it sounds spoken aloud.
In this case, we decided that there was something both metaphorical and physical that was happening to our small town. Like, things were literally collapsing.
Yeah, we're in a collapsing, dying town, both in some way, like, morally and also physically.
Yeah. Buildings were starting to crack and break and go crooked. Also, people were collapsing, sometimes completely fatally, sometimes a little bit at a time. My character, for one, had a little bit of that, and things were bad.
My character was written with the other type of collapse in mind, where I tried to go through a character arc where my character's morality slowly fell apart.
Oh, that is cool. I like that.
In our case, we had a very specific beginning and with the collapsing town, but where we were going wasn't nearly as defined, and I think that really helped set the tone for our game, that we were sort of aimlessly traveling to get away from this terrible collapse.
Our setting was approximately, things here suck awfully. Our goal is away. That gave us a lot of latitude in terms of where we took the story, because anywhere that we could wander off to, or, as we will talk about later, get dragged to, was an option, and it didn't mean that we had, like, failed to fulfill the plot, or we were nowhere that we wanted to be. Mm-hmm. As long as we were headed away and escaping, we were sort of on track.
Originally, we were thinking maybe we were just trying to go to the nearest mountain, because that's the furthest away from something that might be collapsing, right? That got dropped very quickly. Then you go and listen to the second song on the tape, and again you sit in silence, but this time instead of thinking about the actual setting and the small town and all that, you think about what character you're going to be playing in this town. And we do each have a single character we're playing, that's the kind of game it is, and you have to give them a couple of traits and a couple of futures. And the traits can be just basic things about your character. In my case, my character was a doctor who had ruined hands, and the futures can be either hopes that the character is trying to do in the future, or something that the character believes will happen to them. To go into more detail, my character was the well-named Dr. Susan Petrichor, who was a doctor who in her past had somehow done something that had resulted in patients dying. She was hiding out in a small town away from people who would find her and throw her into jail for manslaughter, or is it manslaughter if a doctor does it?
Malpractice.
Yeah. Throw her into jail for malpractice. It was the case that the collapse was actually taking her hands, and her futures were that she wanted to see her kids again, and she'll be wearing that ball and chain. And you may notice that last one sounds a little bit different, because that last one was a literal line from the song that we listened to.
Which, I can't remember whose cover it was, but it was a version of House of the Rising Sun, because I... Again, a confession about the way my mix was designed to be very, very playable. As the first one, had opted for a song that I suspected people wouldn't have heard already for setting, but for character, the one that you have to explicitly use a quotation from that track as part of your character concept, I went, you know what? What if we pick something where people pretty much already know the lyrics? We will have seen this song before, and it'll be easy to pick up and slot into a character.
So I took that line from my character, and it doesn't have to mean what it meant in the song particularly. It just has to somehow slot into your character, and then you can have it mean whatever it means for your character. So, like, I'll be wearing that ball and chain is my character was pretty sure that at some point she was going to get picked up and found out and taken by the fuzz.
And that's interesting because, Raven, I think one of your character's traits was also keyed off that ball and chain line, and it meant something completely different for you.
My character had secretly, right before the road trip began, killed his wife, who had had a really cold, codependent relationship with him for a long time that had finally come to a head. And for him, the ball and chain metaphor was more the standard use of that idiom, where he felt that he was going to continue to be put down by his wife, even though she wasn't around anymore.
Not to transition this too much, but I felt like part of Ribbon Drive that really stood out to me is that it exposed a lot of weaknesses in my role-playing, at the very least. Since the character creation was so free-form, there wasn't any sort of, like, a Dungeons & Dragons alignment to fall back on how would my character interact to this. So I felt that my character was a little less defined. I went off the line, I'm making a cocktail called Grounds for Divorce, so I decided I was going to be a bartender. My character, I wanted to make her a little enigmatic, that she knew maybe more than she was letting on about the collapse, but I am concerned that it didn't really come off very well. A part of the DM-less system was that it felt very easy to god mode, for lack of a better word, because you were not only describing necessarily what your character was doing, but also, you know, oh, Raven, your character stops driving and gets out of the car.
I hear you about godmoding, actually, because I was the first person to speak once we started the game, and literally the first thing I did was godmode someone. That was how we opened. By the time we had reached there, I was like, oh, I have, like, one sentence. I have one sentence that I think will be cool and start the setting in a direction that I'll find interesting, and that hopefully other people will, too. I have to confess that by opting towards something like magical realism or horror, I knew at least Bram would probably be, like, comfortable in that kind of a world. But to page back to the first thing you said about malformed characters or half-formed characters, mine was absolutely half-formed. I don't know what I was playing. I don't think I didn't solidify down into a character with traits and quirks who could live in the world until a ways into the session. I was still figuring it out through, like, the first 4 to 5 scenes.
Yeah, I feel like the concern about godmoding was definitely in my mind. I don't think it ever really came up. I think I felt that we were all pretty good about not overstepping anybody's boundaries of, oh, Charles, your character does a backflip and just murders all these monsters and it's great. There was never any of that.
I think that probably would be overstepping the boundaries of the game itself, too. Like, we are all playing our own characters. We all also control the environment, but we don't directly control each other the time. No. Now, Charles had a specific line that he really liked starting the game, and it worked pretty well, and it did involve having Raven's character be doing something very specific, but in that case it worked because he was kind of setting things up, I think. It wasn't something more detailed.
Yeah, I mean, most of the danger in godmoding in these sorts of systems, right, is you can trample on the characterization that someone had planned for their character by making them do something where they're like, yeah, and your character helps the party out as we do this. And you're like, no, actually, my character's unhelpfulness in these particular situations is one of her primary traits. She doesn't feel helpful. She doesn't feel she can be useful. So no.
I think it was you, Charles, that mentioned that a basic familiarity with the rules of improv helped.
Oh, yeah.
That there was no complete shutting down of people's ideas or characters. There was more of a yes and feel to the game.
Do you briefly want to say exactly who your character was?
Oh, yeah, sure. the character that I barely had.
I mean, I know you barely had.
So. Yeah, no, it's okay. I was the seldom seen kid, which is actually...
Very appropriate.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I was... twists and turns. Yeah, I was the son of a ruined man, which is the line that I took out of the second song. A seldom seen kid is also, like Olivia S., I took a bit of the first song and ate that for character fuel. No, I was a cheerful, well-meaning juvenile delinquent whose parents and home life were falling away to some constellation of collapse, capital C, who consequently had no particular desire to stick around this town but sought freedom and adventure.
We also had Shannon playing with us, and she's not here today, but she played a character that she wasn't entirely satisfied with either, who ended up being kind of like a seamstress. Is that a good way to describe her?
Yeah.
No, there is a line about sewing blue jeans in House of the Rising Sun, which you could be forgiven for forgetting about, but that was one that she stole, and yeah, that was, I think, one of her primary character traits. Mm-hmm. She did a lot of, there was a lot of off to the side of the panel sewing in our
game.
She
fixed my coat.
Yeah.
Another quirk of the character creation system was that it feel like we all tried to not have too much overlap in the lyrics we chose to incorporate into our characters, which... No, there was some overlap, and it worked, but it did lead to, you know, Shannon having the men's blue jeans character trait. My secondary lyric character trait was so forgettable, I don't even remember it, but it was not a primary lyric at all, and I think that was I'm not sure how important it was that we didn't have any overlap. I mean, see Bram and Raven, they both pulled off their characters very well, even though they both had the wearing the ball and chain. So that is something to keep in mind.
For you playing Raven Drive, I don't think overlap matters really. Lines will mean different things to you. You can restate the line a little bit to make it match your character. Don't worry about it.
That having been said, so if you are building a mix for Raven Drive, second track should not be Aphex Twin's Come to Daddy. We're doing one Aphex Twin joke per podcast. That's my thing.
I feel
now.
Like there's a story in here, and I am just...
That is a song with one lyric. It is Come to Daddy.
We did have Sucks to Be You in this. I'm glad that wasn't a second song.
Could also be a Revolution 9 joke if we want to.
Number 9, do that.
Yeah. Actually, number 9, terrible idea.
Also, am I being picked up? It gets really... Am I being too quiet?
You can talk a little louder.
It gets all small. All right.
You're talking in your high cosplay voice.
Let me see.
I think.
No, when you're in costume and someone's like, I like your costume, you're like, oh yes, I like that you like my costume.
Is it a better or worse voice than my normal voice?
It's your cosplay voice. I've only ever heard you use it in cosplay and now in podcasting.
I am going to start imitating that breathe you do, though.
We both do that one.
It's true.
It's a trait that I'm not
even sure. It's a family trait.
God, I hope not.
So,
Charles, do you want to tip our listeners in on the first line of our...
Oh, yeah, no, I guess, this is the part where we can finally get to the first line of what we did. We're on minute one of the actual role-playing of the role-playing game. Perfect. All right, guys. Action-packed. Mm-hmm. You know what you came here for? Setting and character. Yeah, so my opening line, I don't remember it exactly, but it was something to... What was your character's name again?
Maybe it's Arthur.
Arthur Patrick?
Arthur Dent was not Arthur Dent.
There are two things about my character's name. First of all, his first name was something...
Can I get my card, actually?
Yeah, oh, sorry, man. I forgot I had these here.
Arthur Davis. Nice.
Were you Taylor?
Don't
no, I clapped. You. You were Jacques.
Oh, yeah. Jacques. Mm-hmm. Jake Valla. All right.
So I was trying to go for the man with two first names thing, which is harder to do off the top of your head than I expected it to be. And I went for Arthur because it's not one of the real-world names I usually use for characters. But it makes it hard for me to remember. Hey.
No, fair enough. All right, well, so my opening line was, Arthur had agreed to drive until sundown, but it had been 14 hours now, and the sun wasn't cooperating. And that's what I opened on.
So that set the tone for our entire little adventure. Charles was originally trying to go for magical realism. I think that set us straight into surrealism, though.
No, things got weirder and weirder as the day went on. We did not hit, like, flying monkeys flinging pies around sorts of surreal. Oh, God damn you all.
No. The scene immediately after you leaving, I was like, oh, and we see a entertainment barge in the distance, and Olivia's like, oh yeah, we go up to the ship, but it's not in the distance, it's a tiny ship, and we're all, well, that was a waste of time, I guess we keep going then. And she's like, no guys, we need to climb on the tiny ship, it's like this big, it can support all of our weight.
I have no defense for myself. It was though as a perverse spirit had possessed me and whispered into my ear.
Yeah, no, punchiness crept in at some point. I think the closest we got to it while I was there, because, spoilers, I was not able to stay through the entire session. We do later encounter some magic furries.
They were kind of werewolf squashed.
Yeah,
Sasquatch
Swinder Furbs.
I mean, they were just scary things.
No, I thought that those were...
I was chill with those.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, fair enough. That was the high mark for Goofy for me. We'll get to that. All right, so, but, yeah, we start driving till sundown, and the sun refuses to cooperate.
The smiley man was also...
I liked the smiley
man. Yeah, he was good. No,
there are treats waiting for you in the latter part of this. Yeah, so we start piling into Arthur's van, car. You had, like,
you wanted him to have a van.
Cool, yeah, we wanted a van, but...
You didn't know him yet, but he was totally the kind of guy who bought a really fancy car and then felt guilty about it forever, which was important to me immediately, but the part of the god moding that you did was that you continued to describe his car, and then we had to double back for me to say, no, that's not the car he would own.
This is another way in which your talent as a hypothetical improv troupe will have a fair amount to do with how smoothly flowing your game is. So I know that something that I did was I aimed for songs of about medium length, which is to say, like, 3 to 4 3/4 minutes. And because we had moments like that where we had to like go back and backtrack as the song is still playing, we are rapidly running out of time to have a scene happen within a single mood. And I know Olivia also had some thoughts on that.
We might want to explain very briefly. The way scenes work is that going around in a circle, each player gets to start a scene, set a scene, decide what's happening. And while you're doing this, the mixtapes are playing continually in the background, so that helps you grab inspiration for the scene and set things up.
When I was reading the book, I remember feeling like this was going to be really forced and tacky, but it was actually a lot easier to do than I expected it to be. And in my head, talking over music seems really unnatural, like especially music with lyrics, but it made the entire session feel a lot more casual to me than role-playing usually does.
Yeah, I thought that was actually a very successful part of the way its mechanics worked out.
Yeah, it felt more like a storytelling game than many of the storytelling games that we played. And about song length, I feel like we all probably went for 3 to 4 minute length songs when what might have worked better are songs in the maybe 5 to 6 minute length. I don't think you need to toss in Rhapsody in Blue or anything. God, do you need fish songs? Anybody?
I would need to know a fish song.
It's the longest song in my iTunes. So it's like, but it's something a little longer that you could keep a coherent feel of a scene in would work, I think, a little better than what we had, which sometimes happened where we would start a scene off with a certain song, and then the next song that would play was something totally different. And I feel like we kept it together well, but something to keep in mind.
Sometimes the song transition felt really natural, and it led the scene in an interesting way. And sometimes the song transition was almost completely scene-breaking, where the music would come on, and we would either have to ignore it or veer off into a weird direction that nobody at the table seemed to want to be going. I think that part of the problem was that a number of our playlists ended up playing out of order, or I know that even some of them didn't have particular orders they were meant to be played in to begin with. I think that putting some thought into not just what songs you put on your playlist, but how the transition from your first song to your second song and so on feels, listening to it, would be really valuable for making the game feel more coherent.
Mine had by design an order, and I think it was stronger for it. I played it for Olivia D later after the fact, and it was, for various reasons, it had to be shuffled, and it was much worse mixed that way.
Mine was too.
I hated it.
He complained a lot.
I complained a lot, too. We left here, and the whole way home, I complained about my playlist being out of order.
That is, and not to overstate the importance of the lyrics or the themes of your playlist. I know, again, as I said earlier, my playlist was about, you know, werewolves, zombies, all sorts of ghouls like that, and none of them showed up explicitly in the game. We had a few run-ins with various extra-dimensional monsters, enemies, but, you know, during Werewolves of London, we did not encounter actual werewolves. During zombie songs, no zombies.
So one thing that I was going to bring up before is that, so the way that our mixes have different personalities to them, I think is valuable because of the optional mechanic. And what that is during a scene, if you are the last person to talk, you have the option of bringing up an obstacle. And this could be anything from, like, a person is attacking you to something is blocking your way or whatever. But it has the in-game properties of you cannot progress past this obstacle unless you use up one of your traits. And it has to be a trait that you have specifically marked as being a thing that you explored during a scene already, and you put a little check mark next to it in that case.
So we might actually have to page back and talk about traits and their activation first then, though, right? Activating a trait is just within the context of a scene, you use it and you note it down, or you sort of zoom in on that aspect of your character and bring it to the forefront and make sure that, we've talked about like the mutable nature of truth in like role-playing games. and you instantiate that particular truth. You collapse the waveform and assert that you are a character who actually is a son of a ruined man, to take an example from somewhere in front of me on a note card that is my character sheet. And that's actually true now. That's not just a thing that's in your head about your character. It's there in the game. Other characters have seen it. You have seen it. And it is, for a certain value of real, real.
Which is something to keep in mind during character creation. My character's traits were a little generic. I had congenial and mysterious past as character traits, which were a little hard to confirm and didn't really come into play. It was hard to know, for example, how nice do I have to be to check off congenial? When is it appropriate to bring in a mysterious past? When you're creating a character, something a little more focused.
I really like the notion of trying to very explicitly bring up your mysterious past in a scene. You could just go turn to a character next and you go, "Hey, have I ever told you about my past?" "No, I have not." And a check mark. Weaver, got it. Yeah.
Damn right I haven't.
Cut and print.
Like, I think it was checked off when my character could read the mysterious runes that started replacing highway signs.
I liked your character a lot better than you apparently did. I think that as silly as the idea of activating mysterious past is, when you did it, it seemed to happen really naturally over the course of the game.
Thank you.
It was subtle enough that I'm not sure I would have been able to identify it as a character trait of yours, but I think it did improve your character and your roleplay, and I like your character just fine too, just so we're clear. I think we may all have liked your character a little more than you did, but criticism of your own endeavors and your own creations is, I think, a natural human state.
So, like, I may have been skipping over this whole trait part here before. I do want to stress, I do actually think it is a pretty cool way to make you actually have to think about the traits of your characters and help you define them a bit during play. I thought it could be effective, and I had a lot of fun just describing my character's ruined hands all the time anyways, but it was certainly helpful that also gave me a trait, I guess.
I've actually never hated the part of role-playing where I give myself, you know, 5 ranks in acrobatics and then ask myself, what does it mean to be a person with 5 ranks in acrobatics and 2 in bluff? But that's just because being able to fill out those tick boxes and define yourself is, as the existence of BuzzFeed quizzes will tell us, a really magnetic human trait. And this game does it through that second song thing where, like, instead of your list of traits being, you know, acrobatics, diplomacy, it's son of a ruined man, wear the ball and chain, sewed some blue jeans.
Not to diverge too much, but from a game design perspective, as Charles was saying, the freedom that comes from working within rules can be more effective than just complete freedom, as Raven Drive gives you. It is easier to work off some small constraints rather than to just be given a giant field to play in and say, all right, kid, go wild.
Is this the part of the podcast that I say that I liked it in this system, but Microscope did it better?
Let's not.
The joke being, I think I've said that every session I've been in.
Wow, no, we peaked early. I'm sad I missed out on Microscope. I was just going to contribute that, like, mm-hmm. One of the maxims that has guided my creative life is restrictions breed creativity. God help me.
I think perhaps we can discuss that after the podcast.
I was joking.
Oh, were you? Okay, so you say, no, I don't actually know what you're talking about.
I was making a good joke.
Oh, okay. I was saying, my response then.
We have yet to have a session that I haven't unfavorably compared the system we played to Microscope. Okay.
Dread. Caveat, Raven has
I only wasn't been in Dread.
Raven has only been in our world.
He wasn't in the podcast you're right. For Dread.
Our world building games. So, as such, Raven has compared all world building games to Microscope. And they've come up wanting.
All right, and having gotten slightly far afield, we can actually move past the first scene of the game in which we passed the talking stick around and clarified that, yes, all of us were really in a car and not a van, really a car. And yes, we were driving, and we decided eventually on what direction we felt was most thematic. I think we decided east.
Weest?
Oh, yeah. No, we decided weest because the weirdness was starting to creep in around the edges of the plot, and so not knowing your way and driving a lonesome road towards an indeterminate direction as the town behind you collapses just felt like the right kind of thing. It is fun, by the way. A fun thing about this system is getting to build up these sorts of thematic moments and this to build this tone together collaboratively rather than relying on a single GM to provide you a tone to work within and then sort of trying to play in their sandbox. I think a strength of the system is well illustrated by the existence of the direction weest. So we drove weest for a while, and who introduced the train?
I'll take the credit for that, as I was actually fairly happy with the train. So we're driving during an eternal day. The sun is not moving. It hangs high in the sky. And as we're driving, we come across a train junction, and the train never stops. It never begins. It never ends. It is eternal, much like the day.
And this is interesting because this, if you were to look upon this, you might go, oh, that seems like an obstacle. But that is not what we process that as. Actually, do we ever finish talking about what exactly obstacles are?
Not yet. Let me go on that right now.
Okay.
So, rules-wise, if that obstacle is something that you can get by with one of your traits in a way that makes sense, you can cross out that trait so you can't use it again, but your character has it, and you can use that to move through the obstacle and keep on going. If you can't do that, or you don't want to do that for some reason, what you do is you have to go on a detour. And what a detour means is, A, your scene breaks off and goes somewhere completely different than it was before, and B, that you switch soundtracks. And my cohorts here want to talk really bad, I'll let them in a moment, but I thought that was actually a strength, because in this case, when you switch soundtracks, because they're all themed, it actually feels like you are going from one kind of scene to a different kind of scene.
And so when we first hit the train, we were like, oh, this is a thing impeding our progress. Hey guys, is this an obstacle? And I was like, no one has traits activated yet. So there is an earliest moment you can possibly throw a real plot problem in the way. Because anything before that is just, like, kind of, like, fuck you, first person to put on your mix. We're off to the races, and your section of the music selection is just done now. So we chose not to process it as an obstacle and did a thing that you can do in this setting, which is God mode the setting to do whatever you want. Admittedly, we chose the fairly mundane object, we all get on the train.
And part of the detour mechanic, I feel, worked differently in our game than it would in a more traditional game of Ribbon Drive, because as it's a road trip game. If you run into an obstacle that you can't overcome, you take a different road. Maybe there's a roadblock, maybe something else happens. But we were only in a car for the first 5 minutes of
halfway
the game.
Halfway through the first scene.
Yeah.
We got a car again later.
We did, but
maybe, and I lost it immediately. We were really bad at keeping cars.
It made obstacles a little tricky to deal with, but in a really fun, creative way, where we had to come up with a way that on foot in, say, a spooky ghost town, we could conceivably detour.
For us, too, I think we ended up actually detouring 5 times total. Something like that, because we only ended up doing everyone's mix once, and Shannon was the last mix. We only got through a couple songs in hers, and a couple songs in mine, too, because I was second to last. It might be alright if it's just the case you have a lot more obstacles during your game. You go through a lot, because you can just cycle back through these mixes, and that'd be fine, I think.
Ribbon Drive Prime, I think. Every scene has to have an obstacle. I think that's how it works.
That's how it works.
Every scene has an obstacle, and maybe there's a system to gain new traits out of the songs as you go through it.
I like that.
So you're gaining traits a lot more often, activating traits a lot more often, obstacling and detouring a ton, and all the songs are about butts.
Yes!
I was actually, I'm not sure, are you actually making suggestions, or are you making a joke? I'm not sure which.
I'm half serious. Yeah, like, okay. This is much the same way that, like, we talked about, like, what would make Dread into, like, wacky Dread? Like, I think there is wacky Ribbon Drive. I can't guarantee you that this will be fun. I can't guarantee you that it will be good. But I can figure out where the modifications would be.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree and disagree in some points, mostly about butts.
I hadn't really thought about it, but I think picking up traits along the game, like, if you started with 2 predefined traits and then a 3rd trait that you could pick up at any time in the game but only from a lyric that had just happened would be a really fun mechanic that would make the characters evolve a little more naturally.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because this is a game about, like, approximating a road movie, and there is nothing more quintessential to road movies than the way the characters are changed by their journey. And this is actually not quite a game in which you are changed by your journey. It is a game kind of about whether you reach your destination or not. And that is almost antithetical to the road movie ethos.
Going to Olivia's pro tip corner, a part of... Oh, fuck, I completely... Go ahead. Completely
Olivia's pro tip corner is always immediately cut.
I completely disagree with Charles.
Go ahead.
This is a game not all about getting
destination. Just featured into Wrong Town.
This is a game not all about reaching your destination. And it says specifically in the manual, this is a game about your characters learning to live in the moment. Whether or not that means you should be gaining traits or not throughout the game, that's a different matter altogether. But it is the case that what you're trying to do throughout and is you're trying to go through and either achieve both of your futures or make it so your character doesn't care about those futures. And that's the end of the game.
Just so that I don't forget it, the guidebook recommends a website called 8tracks.com. I would highly recommend it for your game of Ribbon Drive because when Raven and I imported our playlists to the laptop where we played most of our music, they were shuffled, which really put a crimp in our playlists. Raven's much more so than mine, but Charles's playlist was played in order, which worked well.
I will say that getting tracks into 8tracks is a nightmare and a half. I think that site is useful for something, but I'm not sure that it's what I try to do with it.
The podcast is not about 8tracks. I have some long and mean opinions about trying to use 8tracks. I'm the only person here who failed.
For the podcast about 8tracks, do tune in later to 8casts, where we will just talk about 8tracks all the day, all the time.
Where we just talk about websites.
Like, no, just
today we're talking about Google.
No, just
fuck you, Google.
Just 8casts.
You're so hot with your doodles. You ain't shit.
You ain't shit, Google.
So I do know, I did read the same document you did, which insists that this is a game not about the destination, but about the journey. But I think maddeningly at the level of mechanics, I have two destinations. Mm-hmm. My destinations are here, and a central point of how my character resolves or doesn't is not, you know, what sort of person are they by the end, what do their traits look like. It is, so, did you get to that destination? And, like, yeah, no, I think this game has some mechanics that are in conflict with the thematics that it wants to have, and that, furthermore, I want it to have.
I could see that. I just mean to say, the example that it gives for ending the game in the PDF is one of the characters is worried about dying, and they drive by a graveyard, and gradually that character decides that they are going to put less thought on death. It was a little vague in the PDF, I'll say that. Gradually that character decides, after having been thought about it for a lot of scenes, that they are no longer going to be fascinated by their mortality. And that is the end of their game because that character has completed both of their futures. And this is a character who has now developed somewhat to change their opinions. And whether or not that works, whether or not that satisfies the character growth in your mind, that's another idea altogether.
I see both of the points you're trying to make. I think that, weirdly, this
succeeded.
This is a game about one specific type of road trip movie that the author has decided is like the platonic ideal of road trip movies. The assertion that all road trip movies are about learning to live exclusively in the present is such a weird limiting factor to put on a whole genre of film.
I didn't get that strong a sense that the live in the present mantra is absolutely central to either the author's conception of the game or to the way that they expect it to be played. That's not one of those moments where, like, if they said that, I chose to forget it, and I don't think the game suffered for it. Also, I think their example movies range a little more widely than that single phrase would have.
I mean, that's how the future mechanic is meant to work out. The protagonist of a road trip movie is the character that decides that they have no interest in what's going to happen in the future because they're living exclusively in the present. And built into the mechanics of the game.
Yeah. All right, I understand. So I think actually I'm going to betray my ignorance for a moment here, which is that my process of preparation for this game was reading the document on my commute home from work, getting home, shoving a mix into a website in about 30 minutes, and then bussing over to the house where we were playing. And I think I may have missed the degree to which that live in the moment, don't care about the future, that means you're the protagonist mm-hmm. thing is baked into the DNA of a game.
Charles,
I was playing. Yeah, I was playing a Ribbon Drive that, in retrospect now, I like slightly more.
This author certainly seems to like writing systems with philosophical perspectives baked into the mechanics, and this is the second we've played in a row that I question whether the themes that the author asserts are in the game came across in at least our sessions of them.
So we were on a train.
I'm always the one who pulls us off into, like, game theory. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. This is, I'm very interested in this, actually, because, like, I was blissfully ignorant of the degree to which this moral system is actually necessarily at the heart of the game. I was like, oh yeah, no, you put some traits together, you have a future in mind, but you abandon it or embrace it according to, like, your plans. This is, we're playing Crossroads, the game. Like,
I'm so glad someone finally brought up Crossroads.
I mean, it's a nearly perfect road trip movie for this sort of a game. Like, we could easily play Crossroads. I am sad, retrospectively, that no one included Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman. But no, it's a fairly perfect, like, ribbon drive session.
I want you to know that I've been pacing in the background, trying really hard not to yell, Crossroads!
Have you even heard of this?
Oh, yeah. Well, Bram, you're missing out on a movie with Britney Spears in it. That's basically all you need to know.
You're more to the point, you're missing out on a movie where they will get Britney Spears, like, G-rated naked every chance they get. But, like, always G-rated, and it's, like, very weird, because the gaze is all fucked up, and, like, she's not a girl, not yet a woman, and here's her butt, and her panties, and, like, she's gonna fuck that guy from, what were those commercials? Justin Long?
More on Crossroads in our next podcast.
Crosscast! Crossroads. God damn it!
The superior name.
But no, it's relevant because the soundtrack is really important because it's a Britney Spears movie with a Britney Spears soundtrack about a journey into womanhood.
This makes me want to puke. I'm not going to sugarcoat
you
it.
You can also movies. No, you can also see some there's also a really quite highly prominent rape subplot involving what's her face who plays Pensatucky on Orange is the New Black. Mm. And yeah, and for more that one lady from Orange is the New Black casts. More Crossroads trivia. Apparently, that was the role Britney Spears preferred to play, but management would not allow her to play the like recently raped protagonist, which is why that is the character who wants to become a pop artist. Anyways, I know way more about Crossroads than I meant.
Yeah,
to.
No, I
cut
thought
this all out.
I thought we'll I was going to talk about Crossroads.
She's already on this.
I'm not going to cut it all out.
Just cutting the entire podcast.
Anyways, we were on a train.
That makes me want to puke.
No, I'll keep that in.
That's what I'm saying. You'll cut everything about the Crossroads digression.
No, I'll just cut everything about the podcast except for that. No, that'd be really harsh. This is a much better system than that. If it was just, this makes me want to puke, and that's the entire podcast.
Your intro, your outro, and me saying that.
Can we cut it down to only Raven complaining or talking about how he complained?
I can do that.
Because I think there is a Raven complaining supercut available for this.
Fuck. I just do the Kingdom one.
Anyways.
Greatest hits of Raven complaining. Yes.
Oh, this is tragic.
We got on a train. We kept on going. We did another thing, which was not an obstacle, where it wasn't an obstacle, right? Was it? We did do an obstacle.
I think was there a scene on a train and then a scene with an obstacle?
Yeah, was a scene on the train, and four scenes, they end more or less when it seems natural, when you decide the scene ends. Sometimes they'll coincide with the end of the song, sometimes it won't. For us, we were on a train for a bit, we got some oranges, there were a lot of oranges on this train, that was our food for the road trip, and then the train started collapsing, capital C collapsing, and
it fell into the sky because I was trying to think of something odd for it to do that wasn't, like, cartoonish, was obviously a problem, but wasn't, like, traditionally menacing. Coming up with good obstacles is hard. I started one not fully realizing what I would be in for because, also, this is not in the rules, but the moment someone starts the obstacle, you accidentally become the GM. Mm-hmm. You will be up to you, unless your group takes it upon themselves, to roleplay out the obstacle half of the scene, whatever that may be, whether it is, you know, trains falling into the sky or evil furries. Like, you are now the person running that thing. De facto. Not in the rules, just de facto. Mm-hmm. And I did not prepare adequately.
So, this obstacle of train flying up into the sky, we all jumped off the train, and we end up in the spooky forest. And that is when we detoured, appropriately, into Olivia's soundtrack about spooky things being spooky.
Could not have worked better. Like, it was the best playlist we could have switched to.
That was a really clean transition. No, we jumped off a train that had been passing through nowhere into spooky unknown woods, and
we opened onto Wolf Like Me by TV on the Radio.
I feel like Wolf Like Me came out a little later, but that was, regardless, that was like a good thematic choice, and yeah. I like that song.
Yeah, we jumped off of this spooky nowhere train into a more traditionally horror, foggy forest that I think we wandered right into a campsite, and then Charles introduced something that, I think we all liked better than he did, the Slenderquatch.
Yeah, Slenderquatches.
Big old fur-covered creatures with the faces of people we knew.
Yes. Yeah. People we knew, and perhaps people that are two murderous characters ahead murdered.
Malpractices characters.
My mistake.
Yeah. Murder was not a mistake for my character.
And one murderous character.
I'd only murdered one... I possibly murdered a couple people. I tried to leave it ambiguous over the...
Murder-biguous.
Boy, is this a hard thing to communicate in a role-playing game. However, the whole session I was trying for the Patrick Bateman, my character had murdered one person and had decided that that made them an awful person, and being an awful person, they'd probably murdered other people as well, but Arthur had only murdered his wife.
Ooh, boy, that really, I did not, I'm sorry, that did not come, no. I actually really like the notion, by the way, of small town Patrick Bateman, like Patrick Bateman outside a world in which, like, Dorcia exists, outside a world in which, like, you can compare your business cards with your business bros, like, yeah. I'm actually a little obsessed with that. I want to see that character again. I came in with a genre, was weird and hopeless, the mix was weird and hopeless.
Mm-hmm. The game was weird and hopeless. It worked well.
Give or take tiny boat. Because the moment I step out of the room... God.
I know! It was the first scene. I got really mad at her. Like, legitimately, I was like, no, it cannot be tiny boat.
A perverse spirit whispered into my ear, tiny boat! Tiny boat!
So, this is a scene where we find out a couple of things. The first one is that Arthur, Raven's character, is just totally bonkers.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, bonkers unto, like, Wiz 3 bonkers. Don't let him take the first watch because he will try and, like, make friends with the, like, death squatches of the woods bonkers.
Which is to say, we found a campsite, the fire's still burning, but abandoned, and we decided to settle down as a party, and Arthur, Raven's character, took the first watch when the Slenderquatches wandered in from the forest with the faces of those we left behind in the collapse, and he did not wake our characters up. That was really the defining moment of Arthur and kind of the game.
I knew that I couldn't let the monsters eat the party members. However, Arthur did not know that, and his plan was to not wake them up and let them be eaten because they probably were on to him for being a murderer.
Yeah, no, I just got, I'm too doofy to be allowed to live. It was actually a running theme that developed in the game, and this I wonder if there's a lesson to be taken from this. I don't have one that I can phrase easily, is watch out for what character you make of yourself, because it was hard at some points to find anything like an in-world justification for keeping a confessed murderer with no regard for the party in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absent the hand of God, and remember, this is a game in which God is dead and everyone is God. I asked multiple times, like, is there a way to kill a character? Is there a reason he's still with us? Why are we tolerating him? He's not just the friend we don't like. He's not just kind of, like, mean to our friends. He killed someone and is clearly insane. We should leave him.
The justification for that I think we ended up going with is mostly was, as became increasingly apparent when we went through this, and, like, we soon ended up, like, on a highway where all the highway signs were just words from the alphabet in descending order that didn't mean anything in particular, and we don't even know what planet we're on, if there is planets or whatever, that we might be the only humans that were. And even if this guy was a crazy murderer, and he did sure admit to murdering in that same scene with death quatches, it might have been a little beyond us, at least, to just abandon him in a world that anything could happen to him by ourselves. Like, I don't know if we had that capacity in us.
Have we discarded the possibility of calling them Sasquermen yet? I just want to stick that in. It's okay. We can move on now.
Sasquermen.
I think, to kind of wrap this up, I think the general thought was that whatever Arthur had done in his previous life before or during the collapse, the oddities that we were facing now were, I think the general thought was that maybe being murdered in our sleep was better than whatever apocalyptic oddities were going on.
It felt like, and I could not be speaking for everyone else in saying this, all of our characters were motivated in some way by guilt, and guilt ended up becoming a central theme of our game. And at least around the table, it felt like people were keeping Arthur around because, as Bram said, everyone was already feeling bad about something they had done, and leaving Arthur, who seemed like a menacing person, but who hadn't actually hurt anybody around them somewhere, would be a new sin for the characters to grapple with.
A death sentence.
Yeah.
Do you suppose that in Ribbon Drive 2.0, it might be useful to, maybe in the setting or after the setting or after the character development song, to put together some reason for the party to stick together? You know, so in your case, being that this is a weird horror game, like some sort of horrible metaphysical shackles, or, you know, the horrible metaphysical shackles of friendship or whatever, depending on your road trip.
I think we sort of discussed that in our world building phase, where we all met in a tavern and decided to flee the city together, which is one of the looser justifications for building a party.
It's all right, we never met a narrative we didn't like.
I think that this is a weird problem for Ribbon Drive to deal with, because there really are a number of famous road trip movies and road trip type stories. I mean, arguably, one of the early road trip stories is The Odyssey. There are road trip stories that each scene functions to make the cast smaller, where each place you go, you lose a cast member. But in order for that to be replicated by Riven, you hated that I said that.
I would like to note that for everyone watching along at home, everyone in the room besides Raven, made a variety of disgusted and horrified face. We all recoiled at the thought of the Odyssey as Road Trip.
Tell me which traits of Road Trip does.
Okay. I mean, you're not wrong, but I'm angry.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I think he might be wrong, but I would encourage us not to get sidetracked by this particular
point.
That will
be in our next podcast, The Podyssey.
That will be in our next podcast.
Oh, these are getting better.
Are they learning?
They're draw.
Regardless.
See, now you're going to have to leave these in because they're getting so good.
Regardless, the point I'm trying to make is that style of road trip story is really difficult to emulate with a role-playing game, because if you were the first character to stay at, like, the truck stop that the characters stopped at first, what do you do for the rest of the night? Like, we were able to lose a party member when Charles had to leave, but had they collectively said, well, we're leaving Arthur at the campsite as a player, what is Raven supposed to do for the rest of the night?
Yeah, you fairly clearly, at least as far as I'm concerned, can't just say, like, we're ditching you. Like, mm-hmm. It maybe needs to be the case that Raven can decide, or Charles can decide, like, I need to go, or like, I don't think it makes sense for me to stay with you anymore. You know, the metaphysical shackles of our friendship have been broken, say. But I don't think that you can do it the opposite and say jettison a person.
Here's what you do in Ribbon Drive Prime. You allow characters to exit when it makes sense for them to exit. That character spends spends the next song using that song as a character building song.
And then we quit never? Like,
you quit when you feel like it. You're right, you could, I mean, yes, this does provide a way that you can infinitely create and lose characters. You could have a perfect continuity. You could create a Ribbon Drive campaign, but I don't think you would.
Mobius Drive.
I think it's possible that in Ribbon Drive Prime, your characters still have futures, and once you fulfill your futures, you can still be the protagonist.
Yeah, I suppose that's the stronger objection is, no, the game still ends the same way it did before. But yeah.
I think this whole problem was mostly a weakness of our very unconventional feeling setting. Again, this being a simulation of a standard road trip movie, I think the general assumption is that we are all college buddies, high school buddies, buddies at all, of any sort, any
family
form.
Family members.
Family members. That could have been fun, like a Von Trapp family sort of thing. Partridge Family. There we go.
The Von Trapp family is a fine option, too. Look, there's a hole back in my town called National Socialism, and
the crew of a ship who also happen to be mythological heroes.
The crew of a ship who also happen to be the Brady Bunch.
In short, I think what it is this is a system designed mostly for one thing, for road trips, And if you get too far off,
Marcia, Breaker of Horses.
Don't eat the lotuses.
It becomes a little stranger. It is actually the case that there are some supplements you can get for free if you buy a Ribbon Drive in the form of Radeon Accelerator Drive. And what was that other one called? Slash to Ribbons?
Slash to Ribbons, which I read and hated when I read it, and now hate more in retrospect.
Stick
I think it
that
would completely
on the Raven
ruin.
Complaining Master Cut.
Which supposedly changed the game a bit, so you can have it be either like a slasher movie or it can be Firefly, just Firefly, explicitly Firefly. And I don't know how well those do or don't work, but they are free, so if you get Rip and Drive, you can try them out, I guess. Raven read through them more than I did. He was not a big fan.
I don't have really any emotional connection to Firefly. I opened it up and was like, oh, this is a Firefly thing. Not reading this. And closed it. Slash to Ribbons states that rather than making themed playlists that can be about any theme you pick and everyone can show up with different genres of music and have different playlist genres, everyone's theme is mandated by Slash to Ribbons, and the theme is horror, and all of the songs on everyone's playlist should be horror songs. And I think that would just be awful. Like,
No interest in playing that, and that's too bad, because, like, actually, I saw people being down on the supplements, and I looked at them, and I was like, no, Road Movie in Space is fine, but it's really just nerds who won't let Firefly die, and, like, Road Movie Slasher Movie, like, look, there's only so many times we can put Riders on the Storm on a playlist, but, like, that's an okay genre, too, but no, now I see what the problem is. It is in the specifics, not the general idea.
I think mostly it is that the mechanics here at least somewhat push us towards the road trip thing. We've already discussed how much we do or don't think that matches, but, like, the future is being crossed out, I think, is less applicable to maybe the system being something different.
Is everyone's future in the slasher game don't get fucking shanked by maniacs?
I don't know.
The protagonist is the one person who doesn't get shanked.
Oh, good.
That sounds kind of fun.
I mean, I'll grant you that, like, sure, fine, final girl, whatever, but, like,
something that is interesting to me about your complaint, Raven, is that you had 5 soundtracks, right? And I don't know what Shannon's was, because you haven't mentioned it, but for at least 3 of you, the theme was horror. Like, Charles had a horror soundtrack, Olivia had a horror soundtrack, and your soundtrack was about horrible codependent relationships, and that is also horror. So it seems to me like you could do something that is really highly variable while still living within that genre.
Olivia Deep does make a good point. Especially coming from our horror game, I'm unsure. I didn't read the supplement, but was there any sort of, like, a recurring villain, like our Smiling Men, that shanked us?
So, just to respond to that, listeners obviously aren't privy to our behind-the-scenes planning conversations, and as I said when I was pushing against us playing Slash to Ribbons, because we almost did, I think that Ribbon Drive is a system that works really well for horror, but I did not like the very narrow and specific restrictions that Slash to Ribbons put on the game that we could play. It worked really well, in my opinion, that we all showed up and a lot of us had interest in playing a horror setting, and we ended up coming up with something very unique and personal between the 5 of us. I feel like had we all shown up and the plan had instead been, we all already definitely have horror songs and we're not just doing a horror setting, we're doing a slasher movie, we would have missed out on all of the kind of experimentation and quirky details that came out of our game naturally. And I think that the system would have really suffered from that.
No, that makes sense. If you're officially relegated to a specific kind of horror, that's, you know, that's obviously a limitation. And also, I don't know what songs I would put together for a slasher.
Yeah, horror songs.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know if they know how limited that genre actually is, unless you're really, really willing to go deep on soundtrack music.
Honestly, I'll have to say that my soundtrack probably would have functioned pretty well for Slash for Ribbons. There are, and tragically, I can tell you that the horror band Well is a deep one.
We mentioned The Smiling Man, who I think is one of our better creations, so we can skip on ahead, although we are still progressing nearly a scene at a time. We fled the Squashtermen. That is the worst one. I'm sorry. The Slender Squash. The Squished Mender Squashel.
The monsters.
People, yeah. Fine folks, all of them, howling, gibbering. And found ourselves an abandoned town, found ourselves... And that's when we decided we should actually start thinking about supplies again, and somehow, on a long enough timeline, we met in a tavern, we eventually had, like, a campfire with watches getting assigned, and then we were scavenging for supplies in abandoned towns. And, like, I don't know if we did not entirely break out of the D&D mode. And that was the moment in which an obstacle showed up, and the obstacle was, suddenly there's a person in a car in an abandoned town, and he's pointing a gun at you. And it was less jarring than you'd think, only because digression was the order of the day, as far as our plot was concerned. But it was an obstacle, and we avoided it. I cashed out that I loved my freedom, and he seemed to be threatening to imprison us, and I said, "No, sir, I love my freedom," and I leapt upon him, and because I loved my freedom that much, I won that obstacle, and we did not detour.
And we took his car, we took his gun, we did not give the gun to Raven's character.
Who
and
mercilessly begged for it constantly the entire rest of the session. Whenever the gun came up, or whenever I brought the gun up, I asked for it.
I ushered the gun off screen later.
So, yeah, what happened with the gun and Charles's character, the culmination of which the smiling man finally took out the one character that had thwarted him. And in a car crash sequence, Charles's character leapt over to the smiling man's van and...
I suicide attacked. I don't know. So this is the point at which I was writing myself off, because I had places to be and sleep to do.
The car imploded.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the car imploded, right. No, we...
Which I would mark as our final foray into Crazy Town, like... The car imploded, and from that point on, our next two plot details were a large boat that was actually small and a ship full of ghost pirates.
Fair enough, and so that was the last hurrah of serious threat and, like, serious thematics. Actually, to what extent is Ribbon Drive a system that accommodates guns?
Yeah, I agree. Not really much at all.
Yeah, no, be careful introducing weapons into your Ribbon Drive game. They will be a weirdly important plot object, and, like, not in a way that I think improves the passage of the plot by all that much. That is why I, in trying to get our one major villain, attempted to drag the gun with me off the stage.
Successfully.
Oh, good, okay.
Yeah, we didn't have guns again.
Not a heavy combat game for all you out there looking for realistic fighting. One thing that happened, though, is... After Charles had to leave and his character died, we did end up pausing for a little while. I think that was a mistake. I think Rip and Drive is best played in one sitting without interrupting the music, because it sort of took us out of a little bit, and it sort of took us out of a little bit that Charles wasn't there anymore, too. But things did have a bit of a different tone, and not just because the soundtrack had changed when we came back. And we ended up going and having various tiny boat problems. I don't know if I'll have cut that out or not at this point.
The tiny boat you can't cut out. It is the most important thing that happened this session.
Part of what happened after we got on the tiny boat and rode away into the sunset that I feel was an interesting part of the game was that we had two winners of the game.
So, I'm being facetious, referring to them as ghost pirates. While we were on the tiny boat, we end up getting boat-napped. What's the real word for boat nap?
Shanghaied.
I don't think that's the word I'm looking for either.
I was worried that someone had kidnapped your boat.
While we're on it.
Yeah, no, it is a tiny boat. You can't see it if you're indicating something the size of, like, a mildly difficult fish story. Like,
No, I mean, it was big enough for all four of us to ride on it. Like a tandem.
But only that big.
Oh, I had imagined that it was sort of a, like, Alice in Wonderland. You all shrunk down.
No, unfortunately.
No. We were all, like, on a tandem boat.
We ended up being drawn onto a boat where there's a bunch of mirror image people on it that, like, looked like us but did not talk particularly.
So, I was under the impression that they looked like whoever was standing near them because they were literally mirror people, which is how Shannon described them, I believe. So I jumped on that opportunity to kind of accent how much Arthur had changed over the journey, and around the same time had that, like, aha moment that we've seen and talked about happening in some other systems, where I realized that one of my futures, the future I hadn't gotten rid of yet, was find a new calling. And through meeting with a monstrous version of Arthur from back when he had a normal life, I decided that Arthur realized that he didn't need a new calling, he didn't need a new career. Before the journey had commenced, he had already found his new calling, and his new calling was being a murderer. And in checking off my final future, I became the protagonist. However, this scene also worked as a ending scene for Bram's character.
So my character had two futures. One was about the kids, one was about the ball and chain. I'd already crossed off I'm going to see my kids one more time, because we did briefly end up in Illinois, although it was like dream ghost Illinois, and she desperately tried to go and see her children, and the whole building that they lived in was like super new and no one had ever lived there, and it was sad.
I'm sad that we skipped over Illinois, because it was one of the highlights of the session for me, and the game-breaking track was off of my playlist right after we have this just like heart-wrenching scene about Bram's character coming home and expecting to reunite with her kids, and then the house is empty and her kids maybe never existed, and things are really sad. Sucks to Be You by Prozac came on, and we all just lost it. Like, it was the least opportune song that could have come on, and it seemed really mean-spirited, and we all just sat there kind of stunned for the entirety of the song.
I would have watched a movie where that was a soundtrack where that came on after the character had their kids never appear. So maybe your argument didn't work. I didn't have a problem with it, but
it was your character moment, so if you thought it worked, it worked.
It did suck to be her. What do you want? Huh? Anyways, so
yeah, I too felt it was like a little weirdly glib.
It was,
but when the universe provides you a joke with funny timing, you take it. But there wasn't a moment in which I don't think any of us were, none of us were looking for a joke there.
Yeah, I was actually pretty emotionally affected by that. And then my playlist was playing out of order, and that was song like 12 on my playlist, but it ended up playing as like a mean-spirited number 4, number 3.
I took it as the world kicking her while she was down. But whatever the case, we crossed out that future. And then she ended up on Ghost Ship. And at this point, we realized it had turned into night at some point. Like, it had been day forever, and then suddenly it was night, and the moon wasn't moving either, so it could be night forever. And my character was realizing now that although her past was gone, like her kids, who knows what happened, this meant also that her future, the one that she dreaded, was also gone, because who's going to arrest you, right? So it's at this point that, you know, by the rules of the game, by the spirit of the game, she had chosen to live in the present. And I think, given our setting, and for the record, if you want to play this game, perhaps consider something not full-on surrealist, because eventually things start to break down, I think, especially if you play it when it starts being night. This ended up with her saying, okay, we're gonna live in the moment, we're gonna take over this ship, we're gonna have the mirror creatures work for us, and we're just gonna be star pirates or something, I don't know.
Even though this was a little silly, and like the edge of surreal horror vibe that we had cultivated the whole session had firmly broken down at this point, I thought it was really cool that even though the rules of Ribbon Drive don't explicitly allow for a double protagonist ending, that Arthur and Susan both became the protagonist of our story in the same way at the same time, but from opposite directions, where Arthur realizes that now that the world is crazy, he doesn't need to feel guilty about his wife and his desire to kill people, because there are literally no coherent consequences in this world. And Susan realizes she doesn't need to feel held back by the mistakes she made, because the incoherence of the world has given her an opportunity to start over. So they both kind of met somewhere in the middle in a like morally gray area.
So who should play Ribbon Drive? I've already said boring people, and that's being unkind. I think the system is mostly, if you, like me, fail to notice the weird morality and worldview baked into the setting and the rules, I think it's mostly a success at its goals.
Sort of people who should play Ribbon Drive, people who like road trip movies and road trip stories. And I feel like that was maybe one of the things that we were all lacking. I mean, we played Ribbon Drive as a podcast group because we were looking for really sort of non-conventional avant-garde role-playing systems, but I don't think any of us have any sort of over-fondness for the genre.
No, I certainly don't arrive with an inborn fondness. I like their road trip movies. I like. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I like the form, but not enough that I looked at my life and said, like, you know what would be cool? I should get like a road trip style role playing game.
Yeah, I mean, I like music. I really liked the idea of a music based game. Not so much the standard setting.
I don't know about the rest of you. I find it pretty relaxing, actually.
Yeah,
that's what I was just about to say.
Especially perhaps for a GM-less system, this was one that was A, pretty fun, B, pretty interesting, and C, fairly chill. I felt that it was kind of fun to see how things developed without having to be too much work about building a whole world or anything.
I landed in a similar camp as Bram. I think that while, yes, I don't really have any particular affection for road trip movies or road trip stories, I think that Ribbon Drive, a lot more than other role-playing systems, felt like an evening hanging out with my friends. And, like, we came up with a fun story, and, like, some things I liked happened and some things I didn't like happened. But the system made developing characters and the setting so effortless that I didn't have the attachment to the setting that makes it frustrating when, in a normal role-playing system, I have a tendency to get annoyed that something happened that felt incoherent or that didn't gel with my impression of how the setting or characters should behave. But Ribbon Drive is really easy and fun. So
low stress.
It's really low stress. So, like, I would recommend Ribbon Drive to anyone who has a group of maybe 3 to 5 friends who want to hang out and play a unusual role-playing system like it. I think that most people would at least derive some enjoyment from this. And there are a lot of systems that I really like that I wouldn't say that about.
Oh, that's interesting. I was about to ask, like, can we manage a recommendation like higher than most people would be able to derive something? Because in a world where, like, leisure time is scarce, I'm actually usually looking to maximize, but you do take that yourself to be saying, and that is a reason enough that, like, many people should try this.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people really like D&D, and you can get together 4 friends, and one of you will really like D&D, and 2 of you will feel like, well, I like hanging out with my friends, and D&D's all right, I guess. And one of you will be there literally just to hang out with the other 3 of you, and they hate D&D, but that's what you guys are doing. And I don't feel like anyone could feel that way about Ribbon Drive. Anyone who shows up to a Ribbon Drive session is going to leave at least feeling like, well, it was fun to hang out with my friends.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of pastimes in general that aren't like that. We could all go to a movie, and there's a good chance one of us would leave hating the movie. And for that one person, the best thing they could say about it was that they saw their friends, I guess. Like,
yeah, fair enough. I mean, I do look at a movie, it's easy to look at Ribbon Drive and that comparison and go, yeah, no, I saw my friends and we made just the worst movie. God, what a dumb movie.
Yeah.
Tiny boat, Death Squatch of the Woods.
We may well play Fiasco at another for another podcast. I hear that's kind of what it's like.
Actually, I want that game.
We'll try it, probably. Ah. I hear it's really good. Whatever the case, though, what I was going to say is, I think that Ribbon Drive is a nice intersection between storytelling and sharing music mixes, which is a thing people like to do. Like, I'm not a big music person, but I kind of enjoyed making a little mix. I enjoyed hearing other people's mixes, and I thought it was fun to sit and listen to music with people.
Yeah, I mean, as Bram made a crack about earlier, we don't really share mixtapes as a sort of a society anymore, so it was really nice to sit down and, like, I had no idea what Bram, Charles, and Shannon had taste-wise in music. So it was really nice to sit down and think, oh, cool, I feel like I'm getting to know you a little better in this small way.
Like, now, you know, it's unironic witch house, so that's...
Is that a thing?
.tumblr.com.
Yeah, no, for
no, Charles busted out the witch house, and...
I have no great love in my heart for the way that on a long enough timeline for any given activity, nerds will make it a drinking game. Someone will say, oh, what about as a drinking game? And then someone will say, and this is always what the second person says, that drinking game? You'd be dead! It's always, it's just this one, two thing. So I hope...
See, we're hanging out with Methuselah here.
Yeah. No, I don't know why the person who's your friend here is just a really cranky old man hand puppet, which you're missing out on my hand.
That's people. How my friends sound in my head, so...
Yeah, no, just old and weird. But...
Play
so
microscope
I wanna...
again.
I want it to be known that I am drinking game critical when I say the following... I think Ribbon Drive might be a pretty fun drinking game. I think it might be a pretty good... and I don't know if you want to, like, this traditional drinking. I don't know if you want to, like, be like, every time the scene transitions, everybody take a drink. But, like, no, I think, like, this might be a decent, like, 3 or 4 beer night with friends game. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there is a lot of role-playing that is improved by drinking alongside it. But I feel like Ribbon Drive might be the thing that does.
Especially if your setting was grounded pretty heavily in... reality, so people weren't trying to fight to keep a tone together, which everyone at the table was definitely very, very obviously trying to keep our tone coherent for as long as possible. But, like, I think Ribbon Drive would play really well as we're a group of criminals who just robbed a bank and are on the run from the law. And, like, if we hung out and drank while doing that, that would probably end up being a pretty fun story.
Be more accurate, too.
As a person who doesn't even drink, actually, I think that's a pretty good take on it. I would certainly hang out with people while they play Ribbon Drinks. And that's
actually,
be
oh, I meant, I was planning that. I had that pun in my head.
Booze Drive.
that's why you are not the pun master.
Booze Drink.
And
you completely failed the pun.
Ribbon Drinks. Yeah. The countervailing point that would, like, so how do you know if you shouldn't play Ribbon Drive? And I've got the one for this one, which is actually, I think if you want a game that models conflict, like character versus world, or character versus setting, or character versus character in, I don't know, this feels like really harsh damning, but in a satisfying way? I don't know. There's nothing... No one can make you fail in Ribbon Drive except the person sitting next to you. So I think it'd be fun to model, like, criminals on the run from a heist. Someone will just have to play the cops at some point, and it'll be weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds to me like you shouldn't play Ribbon Drive if you are a rules lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I said before that Ribbon Drive was very casual fun, and I do stick with that for the ups and downs, because... it is not the game that you play if you want to do... I hesitate to say something serious, but it's not a game you want to play if you're looking to do something perhaps in-depth and complicated. This is a game where things are fairly loose and things are fairly chill.
Perhaps in Ribbon Prime, our hypothetical revisioning of Ribbon Drive, there could be sort of a division of the players into teams... one team which is more character-focused, which I think in our scenario would be Bram and Raven, and one team that is more setting-focused, which would be Charles and I, where it would still be a collaborative storytelling effort. No one would be the boss, but I felt that we didn't all need to be present in the story, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, if someone didn't need to be present in the story, if you're right about that, we actually could do the style of road trip that we lose members along the way. If you had been lost early...
Yeah.
Fair enough. You might just move backstage. You might just become part of the techs.
One of the convicts is shot out in a conflict with the police, and now that player becomes the
car.
What happens to the dead in Slash to Ribbons, by the way? Because Slash to Ribbons is this weird thing where, like... yeah, character death is a thing, which is something we're like, how do you do character death in this system? But apparently there's just a variant where that's the rule. Mm-hmm. So what do you do to the dead in Slash to Ribbons?
I don't remember. You should go look.
Well, how about I...
I remember that a character dies each failed detour.
It's just sit and twiddle your thumbs, keep drinking.
But I did a kind of a loose reading as I became increasingly unhappy with the variant rules. But I didn't see any indication of what...
I hope they all just become part of, like, the gestalt consciousness of the slasher.
Well, I just want to play Ribbon Drinks Prime. Can we do that? Can we, like... is that a thing that this allows for? Is we do, in fact, like, make a second run, knowing what we know about the system now, perhaps making alterations, play it and then, you know, do a part two on it.
Maybe. Possibly some subset of the alterations we proposed, because I don't think actually you can combine all of them into
one coherent system. No.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, we would have to, you know, shop it out.
If I'm going to play Ribbon Drive again, I'm going to drink.
Drink and Ribbon Drive? Maybe we'll find out one day. For now, like always, our deepest thanks for listening, especially for such a long episode. If you want to check out our playlist or follow the hosts, head over to parallelurl.com. And, as always, if you like the show and you want to help out, we will love you forever if you find a minute or two to head over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a quick rating or review. If you want to buy Ribbon Drive, it's available for $8 or one good deed at buriedwithoutceremony.com/ribbon drive with a hyphen. I think it's certainly worth your time.
Be honest with me. Is this the source of our problem?
No.
I never knew.
It was not.
It's a fine gift.
It is a fine gift. Best wishes.
Truly,
this part is getting cut because...
This is the airy spirit.
This is not getting into the podcast because no one can see that.
No, you can take a photograph of it. Are you kidding?
It's the fine gift.
Yeah, I think that
I'm
might be it.
Can anyone visit my website?
Oh,
we have found the source of the problem. The source of the problem is that there is a tiny boat in the room.
Olivia was tired and looked over and was like, no, it's gotta be a small boat.
Anyways.
Whoa.
You alright?
This chair is shifted in a way that worries me.
Do you want to switch chairs?
I don't know.
Is it the chair or is it the floor?
Or is it you?
Oh, damn. Things got scary.
We have other chairs.
Fatty, fatty chair ruiner.
If you so desire.
No, I mean, not that this disproves fatty, fatty chair ruiner, but I feel trouble with those chairs too.
They're not that big.
It's sick sulfur.